Welcome to Chit Chat Money. This is our Thursday deep dive episode where we talk to an individual on a single stock. And today we're talking about Playway, which is a video gaming stock most people probably haven't heard of. And we're talking with Spencer Sabelli. Did you have any highlights from the interview?
I think the big takeaway is, personally, it's going right up on the top of my research list. So if that entices anyone to get interested in listening to this, but if you like gaming stocks, if you like that industry, this is a, I don't want to call it a hidden gem because we don't want to, you know, you got to listen to the interview, do your research yourself, but it's quite interesting, kind of an undiscovered company in Poland. And I thought the most interesting part was that their revenue is all in USD and Euro and they're paying wages in Poland. So there's a natural arbitrage that gives them an advantage, at least from a margin perspective. That was the most fascinating part. And again, there's a lot of other stuff with these niche PC games that they've been doing quite well with.
Yeah, and I'm just generally a big, I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm generally a big fan of these sort of, I guess you could call them video game holding companies, where there's, you've got a lot of diversification in terms of the games that bring in revenue.
Bracer Group, we had the CEO on. If you like that, yeah. This is a very similar business.
Big fan of that structure. But before we get to the interview, we want to talk about our friends, our sponsor. It's Quarter for this episode. And we're in the heart of earnings season right now. I'll tell you what, used Quarter this morning, used it yesterday. I'm officially a two-time DAU now.
You could put it on 1.1 speed. It really helps speed up that conference call when people talk slowly.
Are you a skip to the Q&A kind of guy?
Nah. Well, depends. It depends. It really depends on the management team. A good executive team, no. But if you're one of those executive teams, and if you're listening, executives, please stop repeating just your financials from your letter. If it's someone that just repeats their financials from their letter over and over, like 20 different metrics, I will be skipping. But if it's usually, you know, a short one that a company just highlights some things that were in the letter or some qualitative stuff, I'll listen.
Yeah, I listened to the Spotify one this morning and they got that up pretty quick. They also get the transcripts up pretty quick too. So if you're not sure what it is, I guess I should explain. Quarter is an investor relations app for your phone. They have it on iOS, Android. You can listen to conference calls, read transcripts, read presentations, all from one app. It's pretty nice. It's 100% free. It's Quartr. You can also check them out on Twitter at Quartr_app. They have tons of companies. So go ahead. Like I said, check them out. Without further ado, let's get to the interview.
Welcome to Chit Chat Money. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer interview industry experts and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Money is a CCM Media Group podcast. Ryan and Brett are also general partners at Arch Capital, and Arch Capital may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Money by Ryan or Brett or any other podcast guests is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome in. Today we are joined by Spencer Sabelli. He is an investment associate at Robotti & Company. And he actually contacted us via email and we were able to read one of his research pieces on a company called Playway, which kind of piqued our interest because it's in the gaming space and we follow gaming. So how did you come across Playway to start? And then what interests you particularly about the Polish gaming market?
Yeah, definitely. So how I actually found it is, yeah, I still am a big shareholder in CD Projekt. It's one of my largest holdings. And, you know, that's had a pretty unfortunate run. But I guess what got me interested in CD Projekt is, you know, the year they released Cyberpunk, so fiscal year 20, they did like a 54% net income margin, right? And just super, super high. I think Take Two that same year did, you know, 13%. So I was like, huh, that's a bit strange. And yeah, just kind of started to look why, and you know, saw 70% of their revenues are, you know, USD and Canadian, and you know, the entirety of their costs are in Poland. So just giving them this huge sort of margin bump. And then yeah, from there I just, you know, wanted to see, are there any other players in Poland that do this? And you know, it turns out there's just a massive sort of ecosystem in Poland. I think there's 65 public, you know, video game developers, and then maybe like 10 to 15 kind of video game related companies. You know, there's one that operates like a digital skin like exchange platform. There's one that's like kind of a knockoff Steam. So there's just like a massive, massive sort of ecosystem there. And it's super, super interesting. I think I sent it to you in the original email, but the entire industry, like I think 96% of revenues are, you know, exports. So they're outside of Poland. I think 50% industry-wide comes from the US. You know, the second biggest market is Germany, third biggest is France. And I think fourth, Asia is about like 10%, you know, mainly Japan's and China. So just the entire industry, you know, experiences the same phenomenon of, you know, revenue and stronger kind of Western currencies with really, really cheap input costs. I think the average wage in Poland is one third of Germany and it's a quarter of the US. So, you know, you have really, really cheap, really good programmers, and, you know, a really strong kind of revenue base. And, you know, they're all paid in zloty. The zloty has been weakening pretty significantly against the dollar and the euro, you know, past six something months. And then in addition to that, there's just like a really strong culture of, you know, I guess like mathematics and engineering. So there's just an abundance of local programmers. It's just like kind of in the culture. So that also like pushes down average prices and, you know, just the supply of workers in that arena is pretty strong. So you kind of have this like threefold phenomena where, you know, they're all earning money in USD and euros. You know, wages are a third of, you know, the US, a third of Germany, a fourth of the US. And it's, you know, just a plethora of programmers. So they have really, really high margins. And, you know, the 54% for CD Projekt is kind of, you know, the thing that caught my eye. I mean, there's other studios. There's 11bit, which is public, that does, you know, the mid 40% range. You know, PCF Group does 20 to 30% range consistently. Pre-PGR does like the 50% range. So, I mean, that's what I really kind of liked about the market. And, you know, you could, some of them are still expensive, but you could find, you know, a lot of these players, you know, and arguably they trade at much higher multiples in the US. So you kind of get that discount. And then I came across Playway. Playway is the second largest by market cap when I found it. It may be like third or fourth now. But basically what Playway does, it operates as this massive sort of umbrella sort of ecosystem, I call it. So they basically have direct stakes in, I think it's, you know, 126 something companies now. So I think there's like 460 something public and private in Poland. So they basically have stakes in a quarter of all, you know, incorporated video game companies there. And yeah, basically what they do is they give these companies money, you know, on average it's 1 to 2 million zlotys. So, you know, $500,000, $2 million. And they say, come back to us in 5 years with a video game. You know, it's pretty decentralized, you know, gives them independence. And, you know, he kind of lets them do their thing. And, you know, Playway kind of, you know, they have, I think, 30, 40 full-time employees, kind of quality assurance and different things. So the studios they make investments in, they have the opportunity to, you know, to kind of utilize Playway's network and, you know, just get help with, you know, testing and, you know, prepping for launch and different things like that. So, yeah, it's just, you know, they have really, you know, and obviously there's a lot of busts too. I think at the height of it, there were, you know, Christoph is the guy who founded it and runs it. You know, he was taking, you know, 10 companies per quarter, like five good, five bad. And that, you know, that's kind of slowed down now, you know, just because as they've already built this huge network. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's sort of a numbers game, and he feels he has, you know, some really, really good companies, some really, really good teams. I know they have over 100 games in development right now. And I know over half his subsidiaries that he signed on haven't even released a game. So it's just this kind of massive sort of system, ecosystem. Playaway is the kind of the central organization that, you know, can help where needed with these different subsidiaries, you know. They need some help with programming, or they need to tweak something, or, just questions about marketing, finance. They're the kind of bedrock of this entire organization.
Similar,
so I guess, like, that's Playo in a nutshell.
So they're basically, if I'm understanding it right, they're essentially just the holding company for all these independent studios. They themselves aren't publishing any games, but they're doing it, I guess, through these subsidiaries.
Yeah, so they actually do publish it, a lot of the games, the holding company, and they also do have some internal studios.
Okay.
I'd say that's probably a good way to describe it. It's just this big holding company. It's got its fingers in all these different, sub-organizations. A bunch of them, they own over 50%, so it's fully consolidated. Some are minority positions, and the minority positions, a lot of the times, pay dividends too. So they get real kind of money from that consistently. I think over 24 of them are public now, about 100 million total market value with those. So that's kind of the general strategy right now.
Okay. And with a capital allocation business like this, management is very important. The people that are making these decisions to invest in all these other companies. What are your thoughts in general on management, and why have they become the dominant kind of player in the Polish market, at least in investing in these other studios?
Talking about the management and whatnot. So I guess it's important to explain a bit of the history. So the guy who founded it, Krzysztof Kostowski, he has a long sort of history in the video game industry in Poland. So he actually started, doing a wholesaling company and kind of skirting around copyright laws. There was a bunch of loopholes. So basically he would import games from the West and kind of sell them pretty cheaply in the Polish market. So he got some money from that. And the way he explained it is, instead of buying a Porsche or a flat, you would just invest the money in video game developers. Very, very young, kind of early 2000s and stuff. And, he just kept doing that, kept building up this network. And then he kind of realized that there was this, phenomenon that investors wanted to invest in these companies, but the risk of, investing in a small team of five Polish developers, in their flat in Warsaw is pretty risky. So then what Chris realizes, maybe these investors would rather have me deal with a bunch of them, and they can kind of own that exposure through me and in this company I build. So he just kind of started like that. He started investing in these teams, just 5, 6, 7, as it grows, he's now, pretty appealing to the investor class who want exposure to this, pretty quickly growing market, without having the hit or miss risk that kind of plagues a lot of video game developers. So he was, through that, he kind of developed a name for himself as kind of the go-to guy, right? If you're a young group of developers, you go to Krzysztof. He's willing to give you money. He's willing to take the risk. And as he grows, right, each new investment is, less risky in terms of kind of his total exposure. So he just really built a large name for himself. 10, 15 years later, he's just known as a very experienced kind of, trustworthy operator who's kind of nailed the process down. We talked to him in the past and he said, people didn't think he'd get, one successful company, and then he had one very successful, and then, can he get to 3 to 5 more? And he's kind of hit all the roadblocks and points that people said he wouldn't cross. So I think in terms of operating, he's a great operator. Besides that, he's just very passionate about the company. He met with us, I think 3 times, one time some people in the West Coast, he literally met with us at 9 PM Warsaw time for an hour and a half, 2 hours. He was just very willing to go into the nitty gritty details. He doesn't have a salary. He kind of lives off the dividend. He owns 40% of the stock. So, that amounts to a decent amount. I think it's like a 4.5-5% yield right now. They don't have, company cars, lavish offices. They rent some studios out for their subsidiaries in Warsaw and other cities, but that's about it. So he runs a very low cost, sort of clean shop. and he owns a ton of stock, no salary. He'll meet with you whenever. And you can just tell when he's talking, he's very, very passionate about the company and what he's built.
What types of games does Playway make? Are there any that maybe people in the West would know of, like any hits, or are they more kind of niche?
They are more kind of niche. So, I mean, they really focus on simulator games. So they just kind of simulate real in-person sort of activities. So their two most popular games are called Car Mechanic and then House Flipper. So, I mean, Car Mechanic is a pretty extensive real life simulator of like a working in an auto shop. So you get various jobs and missions, and like there's these detailed engines, and you have to like, screw stuff in and fix the tires and go on the computer and order tires with the right dimensions and stuff. It's like really, really extensive. That was their first major hit in 2014. They've had two sequels since then. One just released this past year. And yeah, I mean, like you could have a Mercedes-Benz, and you could take off the whole thing, rework the engine and give it a new paint job and try and grow this mini operation within the game. Another big example is called House Flipper. That's just simulating kind of, a fixer upper like flipper business. So you'll go on a computer in game, you'll buy a house, it's a dump, there's trash everywhere. You gotta like physically pick up the trash and physically like scrub the walls, make it clean, repaint.
And people are playing this?
People are playing. Dude, House Flipper has over, with mobile, 35 million individual downloads.
That is insane.
That's funny.
It's like the last thing I would think I'd want. Maybe it's the appeal of not having to do the actual labor, but just simulate.
Exactly. Yeah. And then look, you make cool houses. You can kind of show them to your friends and see the different designs and stuff. It definitely appeals to a certain niche. But that's a really cool thing about Playway is they have all these realistic simulators. But I mean, if you're passionate about engineering and like building cars, like you'll love Car Mechanic. If you, are more creative and like interior design or just architecture, like House Flipper, you'll probably really enjoy. And they do that with a bunch of their other games as well. Just they pick kind of really niche environments or games that will appeal to a small percentage of people. And then, I mean, some of them are also just fans of the simulator genre in general. So you have people that'll just, follow Playway and almost like a, cult-like and, buy whatever new game they have. They have one really interesting game. It's called U-Boat. So it's like you simulate German World War II U-Boat. There's like crew management, like there's missions, like first-person combat. So that's a really unique game. There's one called Thief Simulator where you're a robber and you have to go into neighborhoods and rob different homes and see what loot you can find. And there's another one called Gold Rush where it's just like you simulate kind of a big gold mining operation. So you climb into the mining machine, you go into the caves or whatever, and you kind of dig out of the ground. There's one called Mr. Prepper. That's sort of like it's like a base building game almost, but it's like you're building out a bunker. So like you have all these underground rooms and stuff and you can customize them and build them and kind of grow that.
These games are more, they sound very niche, but it sounds like they certainly have their target audience. Are they more like you pay up front versus is there any sort of live services component, or is it all like the purchase of the game up front is really the primary revenue?
Yeah, it's mainly the purchase of the game up front. So normally they would sell for $20. I mean, given the recent inflation problems, especially in Poland, they've pretty much raised prices across the board. So, Car Mechanic and House Flipper would normally sell for $20. They're now going for $25. So that's the main source of revenue. At the same time, there are also tons of DLCs and just like different content packages. So when Car Mechanic launched last August, which took the number one Steam global bestseller, by the way, on the day of the launch, they launched with like a launch day starter pack, $10 to get all this content or whatever. that actually took the number two spot. And then beyond that, yeah, there'll be like, you know, $5 to $10 DLCs, add-ons. You know, House Flipper, they have a new DLC coming out called Farm Flipper. So you need the base game to run it. And, you know, it's obviously less money, you know, maybe like $10. And you get kind of a whole new, you know, content package. So that also helps as well.
Okay. And I want to clear maybe this part up because you talked about it a bit, but Playway itself, are they making any of the, you know, decisions telling the studios, or not the studios, whoever is making the game, like, oh, we're going to sell this DLC, we're going to sell it at this price, or are they giving all the monetization like strategy? Like, are they separating themselves from that, or are they making decisions of how to price this stuff in the market?
Well, it depends. I think Playway does definitely have a big role in terms of pricing. And I guess we'll get into the marketing strategy a bit later in the economics. But they're really good at publishing games and kind of getting people to buy them. And, you know, as they call it, kicking the algorithm. Like, you know, there's, if you go on one of their pages, it'll show a bunch of different games from the same developer or publisher. So they kind of manage all the front-facing stuff and the consumer stuff and feel like they really have that down. You know, in terms of like control, you know, so some like House Flipper and Car Mechanic are internal studios. So they have much more discretion and, you know, it's kind of telling them what to do than they would a company they have 20 or 30% stake.
Right. And that leads to the next question. You mentioned unit economics. I think that's something people are going to be interested in hearing about because they're so strong. How does it work? Like, can you go through just the margin structure and the cost of the business and why they have such strong margins?
Sure. So overall, it has very low overhead. And, you know, they have a bunch of different strategies that make them very, very unique. I guess off the bat, you know, on a $20 sale, the holding company, Playway Group, will usually net like $11 to $12 per game. Wow. So that's on average across, you know, the organization, obviously in a minority investment, you know, that'll be different and they'll usually get a dividend or just depends on the agreement with the group itself. You know, including DLCs and all content packages, so kind of everything they sell, that brings them down to about $6 average net. But, you know, just on average for an actual video game, like a House Flipper or Car Mechanic, $20, they get 11 to 12. And so, you know, breaking down the costs, it's super interesting. So for example, with the Car Mechanic simulator, Playway doesn't pay them. It's an internal studio, but Playway doesn't pay them any salaries, right? So it costs them pretty much, you know, $0 to maintain the group. So what happens is Playway will give them a 15% royalty in all sales of the game that they produce, right? So the net copy per game, that's how it ends up being 11, 12, right? Steam will take 30%, you know, 20, 30%. And then Car Mechanic, that physical team, you know, that group or whatever, 5, 6, 7 people, they'll get 15% ongoing. So that covers everything pretty much. And it's they do that with a lot of their teams. One, I mean, it really incentivizes the teams to stick with Playway. You know, it's just, you know, they get an ongoing royalty for the games. I mean, most developers, you get a salary, maybe some company stock, but you don't really get skin in your own, you know, game you develop and the actual sales that it does. So, I mean, there's other examples as well. You know, the House Flipper team, it's a team of nearly 40 people. Playway does pay out some salaries there, not large ones, but they also pay out, you know, 20% royalty on House Flipper sales to that team. So that's a kind of another scenario. Well, they'll pay some salaries and they'll, you know, kind of pay out that royalty. And then the third example is minority positions, right? They don't really take on the cost. But part of the initial agreement is that these minority positions have to pay Playway an annual dividend. So, you know, if it's 20% stake, you can assume it's 20% of net profit. It differs because there's just so many subsidiaries and different agreements. But I guess those are kind of the three, you know, main kind of structures that they have with these minority or just subsidiaries in general. And also I'd say on the minority positions, like, companies are happy to do it. And like, I'll explain about the marketing in a second, but you know, getting access to Playaway's sort of massive, you know, marketing infrastructure is really a game changer. So I think companies are happy to you know, kind of pay Playaway consistently. But yeah, I guess in general, it's pretty simple. You know, $20 game, 11 to 12 net. Like, I think salaries, you know, I kind of have this written down. You know, the 9 months ending September 21, you know, did 175 million PLN revenue. You know, over 40 PLN, million PLN was the royalty payments. And then salaries is only about 15 million PLN. Mm-hmm. So they're receiving the revenue up front. The main expense is just paying the, you know, the associated royalties and just having very low expenses in general. And, you know, that's evidence. In 2020, they didn't have any major releases, right? So no House Flipper, no Car Mechanic, no really big game. So that was their best game ever, best year ever. So, you know, they didn't have to pay any salaries for the most part. You know, they just pay out 20%, 15% and everything goes to the bottom line. So that's the super unique and interesting thing about Playaway, and creates this very strong sort of incentive structure. And, you know, I asked him, do you ever fear that, you know, teams will leave or, you know, all talent will go somewhere else? He's like, why would they? You know, they make a lot of money from their games, and kind of we support them on the marketing front. And so, I mean, super strong incentive structure, and, you know, everyone's happy pretty much at the end of the day. And I will say another interesting thing that Playaway does, you know, going through the economics, is that they recognize all the costs up front when they arrive. So, you know, a lot of bigger developers like CD Projekt, for example, they'll amortize, you know, the development costs for Cyberpunk. You know, I think it was like 3% a quarter for you know, X amount of years. So that makes them look more profitable in, you know, the year of release, and then, you know, the next quarter, they're not as profitable. And you know, it's not kind of a true, you know, true way to do it. So Playaway just recognizes all their costs up front. On average, they fully recoup the development costs within 3 days. So pretty much anything after that is just, you know, goes right to the bottom line, having, you know, paid Steam and then paying the royalties to these subsidiaries.
Right. What does Playaway's valuation look like today? And I guess what is the last few months have definitely been sort of a tumultuous time period in that section of the world. So what's kind of happened? Have they seen any reaction to that and their stock price at all?
Yeah, sure. I got to add one more thing on the economic front. Why the margins are so high. So, and this is very important. Playaway like spends nothing on marketing. Like, I don't even think they break it down in their income statements, like marketing spend line, nothing like that. And so they kind of have, you know, three major strategies. It's one, they release free demos and prologues, you know, so it's a very limited kind of playable version of the game. You know, it'll be free, you know, and they just hope, you know, the game spreads through word of mouth and they can see what needs to be improved, if it's worth developing more. And, you know, do that for about half their games. Another super important part of that is the wish list. So on Steam, you can add a game or, you know, a prologue to your wish list, and Playaway can monitor how many people have added it to their wish list. So, I mean, it's super smart. I mean, you know, so they throw out 10 concepts, right? And the top three basically get all of the people adding to their wish list. They basically know which games are going to do well before they fully develop them. So, I mean, there's just no need to spend anything on marketing, because they know which games are going to be hits. So, I mean, it's a super smart way to kind of align themselves, you know, with their fans as well. And like, all right, let's cut the BS. Like, here's some concepts. What do you guys like the best? And then they'll develop those kind of more fully and put the, you know, the lower kind of ranking games to the back. Another super important thing is the Steam layout and cross-selling. I mentioned this a bit before, but so if you're on the House Flipper page, Steam will show kind of recommended games from the same, you know, producer, developer, whatnot. So that's super important. And you can kind of swap out the recommended titles and stuff and really take advantage of that algorithm. So there's about 600 pages. Playaway has 65 of them, generate 90% of the traffic. So Playaway, whenever there's a big release coming, they want a fan to see it. They'll put it there and you'll see it, right? So you don't need to do any traditional marketing, in-app banners, anything like that. So, I mean, that allows them to get that income margins in the mid 60% range, you know, even higher some years. Just zero spend on marketing, which is super important. And then one last thing I'll say on that is the sequels and DLCs. Kind of once you have a base game down, it's super cheap to, you know, to quickly kind of remodify it, you know, either make a DLC like Farm Flipper for the House Flipper series. You know, U-Boat was a big game. They have a new game called Aircraft Carrier Survival. It's a very similar layout, you know, same engine, all that, but it's just, you know, you're simulating aircraft carriers instead of U-Boats. So, you know, maybe it costs a fourth of the cost of the original game to develop, but, you know, you can sell for the same price. So there's a lot of things that just kind of allow them to have such high margins. And yeah, zero marketing spend is obviously a big part. Excellent.
Yeah. And how about the valuation?
Yeah. So, I mean, the valuation's really come down. You know, there's a Wig.Games Index. That's the five largest by volume game developing companies in Poland. That's down to about, you know, March 2020 levels. I mean, it's been really destroyed. I think a lot of that is the CD Projekt. They've been crushed. But there's been some pretty poor reports. You know, Ten Square Games has had a bad report. CD Projekt just reported the market didn't like their report. So there's just been an overhang in general in the industry. You know, it trades at about, you know, low to mid 13 times trailing earnings, you know, so September 2021, trailing 12 months. And yeah, I think that's cheap. You know, the Warsaw Index as a whole trades at about a 10 times PE. I mean, and there's, you know, much slower growing companies that aren't as profitable or super levered, aren't necessarily, you know, as clean or in such a popular industry. So I really think it should demand more of a premium. And yeah, it traded at, you know, over 2 times the current valuation, you know, earlier in 2021. I think it was at like mid 600s PLN. It's about like 240 today. And there's other factors as well, right? Inflation's pretty high in Poland. Government's been raising interest rates pretty aggressively. But you know, if you just kind of take a not super aggressive stance, and you know, they could grow EBITDA 25% a year, you know, and that's historically been pretty low for them. You know, it could generate 50 million in earnings in, you know, 2 to 3 years, and you have a $400 million market cap right now. That's, you know, what, 8 times or something, not super expensive. You know, you have companies like Take Two trading at 30 times earnings, and obviously very high quality business, but you could argue the growth prospects are, you know, not as strong as a Playaway. So, I mean, it's, you know, obviously you're in Poland, it's a small cap, there's lower volume, those things do weigh on the multiple. So you can either wait, you know, collect a nice dividend and let this thing grow over time, or, you know, maybe there's a change in sentiment in the market as well. But I think 13 times is a great price. And, happy to pay it.
How does the company grow from here? I know they're focused on these niches, so I think that's maybe a big concern people have. And why the focus on computer or PC games instead of mobile? It seems like these type of simulator games would be perfect for smartphones, but correct me if I'm wrong.
That's right. So I think, you know, the PC culture is just very strong in Poland. So it kind of started as that, and a lot of these developers started on PC games. Having talked to Krzysztof, you know, mobile is very much a strong focus for them, and you know, will be likely a strong driver going forward. I mean, the House Flipper game, you know, 30 something million downloads on mobile. And that's just like super, super impressive. Like it's one thing to, you know, if you're super into designing homes and stuff and playing it at home on your computer versus just like buying it and, you know, playing it on the way to work or, you know, when you're on an airplane or something like that. So that is something that can be a very strong kind of growth driver for them. But I'd say they just started in the PC world, because that's, you know, I guess that's the culture in Poland. A lot of people play on PC.
What about competition? Who are, I guess, Playway's big competitors, or are they really just competing for consumers' times at consumers' time at the end of the day?
Yeah. So, I mean, not many big competitors. I think a lot of it is smaller studios, just independent, you know, studios. You know, Nacon in France, they have tried to enter the genre a bit. N-A-C-O-N. So they have some recent games like, you know, Bee Simulator, Pro Fishing Simulator, Hunting Simulator, things like that. I mean, I just checked it yesterday. You can see active players on steamcharts.com. You know, their Fishing Simulator had one person, and Playways had like 60 playing at that moment. So, you know, I think, you know, there is some risk that other companies kind of see this niche and how popular it can be and enter it, but I think it's a lot harder. You know, the House Flipper game took 4 years and 40 people to develop. So it's a much kind of larger thing than, you know, it would seem on the outside. But yeah, I mean, I think Playway is still better and just has tons of experience in creating these games. Not saying that people kind of, you know, won't try and emulate it, but they have a, you know, a really, really strong position. And I also think they're kind of pivoting as well in their overall strategy. I guess we could talk about a bit.
Yeah, go ahead. Hit on that. Sure. If that's important.
Yeah. So I think, you know, kind of Chris has gotten over the most difficult part. You know, years ago, he would take 40 companies per year. Half of them would be good. Half of them would be bad. And, you know, he has 120 something really strong, you know, not all of them really strong, but just a well-run, diversified group of low-cost programs, right? They're under his wing. They're incentivized well. They get percent royalties. You know, most people are happy. So talking to Chris, he is going to start slowing down, it sounds like. You know, he took a bunch in 2020 because that was a, you know, just an exceptional year for gaming and the market in general. But it sounds like he's going to start slowing down. And on our call with him, he said, they're kind of shooting for one game and one new company per quarter. And, you know, he has gotten much more, you know, I'd say rigorous in his due diligence. Right before, he would just shell out money. All right, take $500,000 and come back to me, see what happens. Now he needs to get to know them. He spends 3 to 6 months with them and really wants to make sure they're good guys. They'll do something good. He likes the project, et cetera. So, you know, I'm not sure the net rate maybe will kind of be the same of teams that are successful, you know, that versus just having a bunch of busts. But they already have the network. They got over that. They could slow down and kind of really utilize this network, right? Like over half the companies haven't even released a game yet. There's over 100 games in production right now. So I think that's a super important part of the story. And there's also new monetization options, right? So I think this is also a huge, you know, part of the potential growth story. For example, they had a German publisher approach them, right? I think it was a 2 to 3 million euro deal. You know, they had this idea. They basically gave Playway all the money up front, right? Covers all the development costs. They say, build this game for us with your low cost, you know, Polish programmers, and then we'll split 50-50 once it's released, right? So it's kind of a risk-free option, you know, for Playway to utilize this network they have. They get all the money up front, they build the game for this German publisher, and then they split the profits. So he said they're getting approached by a lot of deals, a lot of publishers like that who want those deals. Then also on the flip side, you know, if a small development team has a finished game and you know, they want to publish it, they will come to Playway and kind of do the reverse. So Playway's like, all right, you have this game, it looks good, we'll publish it for you, but we want 50%. So just because they have this massive kind of infrastructure of programmers and then this marketing infrastructure of Steam and the layout and stuff, they can kind of utilize that and almost get kind of risk-free royalties going forward. So I think that can be a major driver as well. Then I'll say one thing. He does like to IPO his subsidiaries a lot. So I think they have 23 public ones. He kind of sees, you know, one IPO per year going forward, and kind of the 120 so companies, he thinks 10 to 20 could be good IPO candidates. But it's super interesting. And, you know, obviously you want to wait until the market catches a bid and gets a bit stronger, the Polish game dev market. But like the House Flipper team, right? That's a huge part of the company. He can go and create an LLC, have the same incentive structure, and just IPO that on the market, and then it gets a multiple, you know, thus increasing Playway's NAV. They get money up front from the sale. So there's some optionality in that regards as well. And they've done that several times.
All right. I think everyone's and their minds talk, you know, it's Poland at that place of the world right now is very chaotic, I guess. There's a lot of risk geopolitically. How does the company, are they worried about that risk? Or is there a way, like, will they be, since they have the developers, like, it's not like they need to literally be in Warsaw to build the games. Could they, you know, get everyone out of the country if need be? I mean, what's the risk there? Have they talked about it at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some risk. You know, Poland is bordering Ukraine, it's bordering Belarus. I think it's bordering Russia too, with the Kaliningrad region. So, you know, any escalation or further destabilization, you know, in the Ukraine crisis will have a negative impact, you know, on the market in general, their equity markets and, you know, inflation, consumer markets, all of that. I will say as a response, you know, Poland is a member of the EU, it's a member of NATO. So I think they're pretty well protected from any worst case scenario, right? Any direct confrontation, NATO gets involved and it gets a lot more serious. So that's a pretty strong, you know, buffer. And then, you know, as long as that doesn't happen, I think things will likely be okay and they might even benefit, right? I mean, this thing may go on for a while and the zloty will likely stay weak for a while. And, you know, in that scenario, you know, they're earning, I think it's 90% of their revenues in USD and euros, and all their costs are in zloty. So a weak zloty for an extended period of time is actually a good thing for the company. You know, other risks are, you know, inflation. Inflation is really high in Poland. A lot of that is energy. You know, there's news yesterday that Russia's stopping flow of gas to Poland. So that's obviously a big problem. You know, Playway can easily mitigate that, right? 20 to 25, most of their games, just like that, boom. So they're pretty well covered on the inflation aspect. So I don't think for them specifically, that's a huge issue. I will say though, Poland is probably pretty prepared for, you know, just the situation in general. They have a new Baltic pipeline with Norway that's coming online in a year or two. And that will, you know, they're saying it's going to, you know, completely, you know, fill the gap from the, you know, not importing Russian gas. So, you know, there are problems, but you kind of have to just, you know, and I mean, I think a lot of it's priced in probably too. You know, the stock has been absolutely crushed. Interest rates have been raised. And, you know, this was at 30 times earnings a couple months ago. It's at 13 now. And nothing's really fundamentally changed about the company. So, yeah, I don't worry about it too much. I think they're well protected.
Probably. I think that's all the questions we have.
Is there anything else that we forgot?
Is there anything important, I guess, to the thesis that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think as this grows too, it's an economies of scale thing, right? You grow larger, you have more money, like they have 40, 45 million net cash, all US dollars. You know, so they're now sounding on, you know, companies that specialize in strategy games, right? They're making some, if you guys know Sid Meier's, like Civilization, kind of games like that, more city builder games.
Complicated, getting more complex games since they have
scale more now. Complex games, yeah. Shooter games, you know, survival games. You know, I think they have five companies just focused on VR. You know, three companies just focused on the Nintendo Switch. I know they're going more after mobile, going more after console. So as this grows larger, you know, Christoph can kind of shell out more money, and they can work on stronger projects. And each time they get a hit, right? You know, they recoup the cost in a couple of days, and it's just, you know, flowing right to the bottom line for, you know, for as long as the game is selling. And they're doing cool things too. Like they have this new joint venture with Robert Lewandowski, as I'm sure you guys know, being soccer fans. So it's a 50-50 JV with him, and they're building this kind of pretty big, it's called Football Manager or something like that. So you kind of build out a football team, you know, your stadium, your colors, and you can play as a striker. And it's kind of like, manager mode in FIFA without as much playing. But that's something really cool. And Robert's obviously really huge. And I just think in general, they're a low cost producer, like, you know, with such low wages, they have the ability to take more risk. They have the ability to, you know, do more publishing deals, like the one I mentioned with the German company, and just really utilize this large network. And Christoph can kind of go where he wants. I mean, he's got over the most difficult part. That's why he's slowing down, taking on new teams and stuff. And there's just many different ways to monetize this thing.
Wait, I have one more that just came to my mind. They have, so there's that advantage with the USD and Euro situation. Do you think that gives them a hiring advantage in Poland because they can, compared to almost any other company in Poland, I'm sure there's other ones that have that advantage too, but compared to most other companies, they could say double someone's salary and still have very comfortable profit margins. Like, do you think that's an advantage of convincing people to come work for them?
For sure. And I think that ties into the royalties, right? So, I mean, almost all of their sales are earned USD, euros, pounds, things like that. So, I mean, giving the internal teams, so teams that aren't, you know, kind of outside subsidiaries or studios, they give them direct royalties. So it's super important. And I'd also say kind of, you know, if you come to Playway and join the group, right, you're now part of this marketing infrastructure. You know, there's a much stronger chance that your game will catch on and kind of be seen by Steam players in general and Playway fans. And I think studios know that, and that's a competitive advantage they've built.
Makes sense. All right, I think that's all the questions we have. Spencer, thanks for coming on.
Where can people find
you? Thank you so much for having me.
Is there any way for, like, we have, a big Twitter presence. Is there any way for people to find you there or online? Or if they
have a Twitter, you can search me on LinkedIn. Love to connect and chat on Playway or investing in general. So just Spencer Sibilia.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, that's going to do it. We want to remind our listeners that Brett and I are not financial advisors. Anything we say or discuss here on Chit-Chat Money is not formal advice or recommendation. We are, however, general partners at Arch Capital, so clients may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.